Cody Coates.
Joe, hi.
You didn't say my last name this time.
Joe Coyote, hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm pretty good. It's a nice, beautiful day here. And I heard that it's winter is over. Is that true?
Yes, the winter is over in the city, and we've had at least 2 days over 60 degrees, which to New Yorkers is like socks, t-shirt, where people are sunbathing whenever at any place that has a patch of grass. Hopefully it'll stay that way.
So we have a few tidbits of follow-up. I think one that just kind of became known a few hours ago that relates to what we talked about. We had mentioned that we wanted to know what the hell Scott Forstall was doing, and it looks like he was at Snapchat telling them how to run their business.
He still may be there. You know, they just really got a date as when he started, and I know it was, what was it, a 1 year contract, or was that not even specified? But
I don't remember reading that.
Yeah, this just happened, so he may still be an advisor for Snapchat, and they gave TechCrunch a really cagey answer back regarding if he is or if he's not with the company. But essentially, they didn't deny it, and they just said they didn't want to disclose who their advisors are. But I mean, I will say. Out of all the companies that I thought he'd advise, I did not expect Snapchat to be that company. Did you?
No, I didn't. I mean, but I guess it kind of shows that he thinks Snapchat has some merit. I wonder what kind of decisions he's been advising on. Has it, if it's been businessy or more like producty, like UI kind of stuff? I would assume that's where. But I don't use Snapchat, so I couldn't even make a like deduction from the product to see any hints of iOS 6 in it.
Yeah, and here's my observation. I mean, he obviously is not doing this for the money. Although he is getting, with his stock fully vested, over $50 million. But he was paid not only a very large amount of money from Apple when he worked there, but undisclosed, probably a ton of money to leave Apple and to stay quiet. But, I feel like he wouldn't advise a company unless he was passionate about it. And, you know, Snapchat, I personally don't really like the direction they're going. You know, it started out very simple, and now they've expanded, and now they have this, like, discovery section that I don't really get. And it's just interesting that he has a passion to advise this company. And I don't know, this type of stuff, when it becomes like board members and advisors, like, who knows what that even means? Like,
yeah,
like
Scott was listening to Diagnostics and Usage, and he said, hey, TechCrunch, you know, make sure Cody and Joe find out what I'm doing.
Yeah, and it's what's really funny is that this came out of the Sony leaks that happened months ago.
Yeah.
And there was so much data leaked from Sony that it had to be sifted through, and WikiLeaks sifted it through like everything and made it more searchable, and that's how they found this.
Boys and girls, that's why your password should not be password, and you should not store them in a unencrypted plain text file on your computer.
Yes, that's good advice. So the other notion of follow-up that I wanted to talk about is about notifications. Now, we talked a lot about Apple Watch last episode, and I was complaining that, you know, it'd be nice if we had a little more fine-grained notifications on certain things. And I'll be honest, I guess I didn't do my homework, because I wrote a piece about notifications in general that I'll link to, and how, you know, I need to kind of rein the amount of notifications coming into my phone. But I was digging through a couple of apps and was surprised, you know, like, for example, Instagram has a lot more toggles for notifications than I expected to see. Like, you can have it toggled off, you know, for likes, but then toggle on for specific things, like, you know, getting tagged in a photo. And I didn't really know that until I started kind of digging around. Same with like Tweetbot and Twitterific, and it was it was surprising to me, but also nice to see, because that will help whoever is getting a watch to kind of home down on what exact notifications they want coming through.
It's funny because I had the same exact thought this past week, and I went through and so many apps I had, I was giving them permission to send me notifications, and I was just like, you know what? I really don't want you to send me anything at all ever. And I went through and like turned a bunch of them to no notification allowance at all. Just because I was kind of forethinking of, man, I don't want that. I would get a notification. I'd be like, I wouldn't want that to tap me on my wrist. Go in and just turn it off. Just a quick follow-up, funny story I heard today. A couple episodes ago, we talked about how Samsung had kind of changed and removed a bunch of features on the S6 from the S5, and most notably one of those was being waterproof, right? And I was sitting next to a friend, and he got a text message from a friend of his who had just bought a Samsung Galaxy S6, and the text said, "So I was putting a screen protector on my Galaxy S6 and went to clean it off and forgot that it's not waterproof, and now I am out $400 to get it replaced."
I called this, Cody. I freaking called this. This was such a bad move on Samsung's part. That was, I'll repeat, that was my favorite feature that they had on the S5. And I thought that it was so great that I wanted Apple to even follow suit. And to just remove it a generation. Listen, if you remove it three generations, you know, separate from each other, maybe. But to remove it immediately after you get your user base used to being able to use their phone in any liquid situation, you're going to have bad news. And to be honest, Samsung should really take care of your friend's friend.
Yeah. It makes me think, this past week and all the podcast people have been talking about, oh, having to take your Apple Watch on and off, and oh, I'll have to do it, and any time that it might get wet. And I think that's such a good move on Apple's part to just say, like, you can kind of get it wet, and just playing very conservative on the wet, liquid waterproof terms, just for instances like this. Like, I think it was even the iPhone 6 and maybe the 5S. They were kind of like, not Apple, but news, tech sites were reporting that it's actually fairly water resistant, but Apple would never say that because they don't want the Genius Bar appointments where someone says, you state on your website that it's waterproof-ish, and then they come in because they've dropped their phone in the toilet and now it doesn't work. And the same thing for the watch, right?
Yeah, it's funny. I was just listening to the talk show with Gruber and Joanna Stern, and she said that she messed her review unit's digital crown up because in her, I don't know if you saw her video review of the Apple Watch, she put like toothpaste on the Apple Watch, like she was showing like a day in the life, and she actually messed her digital crown up, and it's not working properly. So topics, we got a lot of them. So let's start with USB-C. So the new MacBook, Apple starting to release K-Base articles. And one of them is how to use your USB-C port for your new MacBook. And within the main article, it links to a sub-article. So at the bottom of it, it says, how do you connect your MacBook to Ethernet? And I have to read this because I chuckled. It says, you'll need to use two adapters to connect your MacBook Retina to Ethernet. Connect your Ethernet cable to an Apple USB to Ethernet adapter or third-party adapter.
Hey, lots of choice. Third-party. You could go with that.
Then connect that adapter to the USB port of any of the following USB-C adapters that Apple makes. So you gotta go through like three levels of adapters, and I'm wondering if it's even worth it, or like, I don't even know, you know, if you get the full gigabit Ethernet, like from going through USB-C, then to USB 2, then to Ethernet. Like, I feel like it's not even worth it. I thought it was funny.
I think that's probably why Apple's doing it, is say it's not worth it, just use, you know, Wi-Fi. But then again, like, I'm sure they make huge margins on those adapters. I mean, they sell them at a ridiculous cost. You can get one that does the exact same job on Amazon for like 11 cents, and you pay $30, $60, $80 to Apple for the adapter. I don't get why they wouldn't just make a damn adapter, but I guess this way they get twice the margins, right?
Yeah. So I thought it was funny. I mean, it's definitely the MacBook of the future.
Yeah, it's very, very Apple to be like, oh, we want you to use Wi-Fi. You don't want to use Wi-Fi? Well, here you go. Use two adapters and see how you feel about it now.
So you were pretty certain a couple of episodes back that iOS 8.3 was going to be the end. And I felt the opposite. And, you know, there has been these rumors that 8.4 was in the works. And
do you want to just call it even? I got the Apple Watch price correct. I will rescind my throne and we're even.
All right, we're wrong. Even.
But 8.4 is a thing.
Yeah. And like, a little surprising that they did this kind of almost incognito, no announcement, but it has a revamped music app. The music app looks...
needs it.
Yeah, it definitely needed it, and it definitely looks a lot more focused than it used to be. You know, it looks like you don't have to dig through as many menus as you did in the past to get to your music. Did you take a look at the screenshots?
I did. I don't think I can get a good sense from the screenshots until I use it, which is probably going to be months away before the public release of iOS 8.4 is out, I assume. Watch, now that I've said that, it'll be released next week, so I can be an idiot on the show once again. yeah, I mean, it looks nice, and honestly, the being able to seemingly jump around much more easily between the different sections of your music is much needed. I have been so annoyed lately with like the very last one where it's like more, and then you have to choose playlists, and like only being able to have four sections of your music, because I switch a lot between radio and then music that I've purchased. And when I want to go to music that I purchased, I have a song in mind that I want to listen to. And in that case, I usually either have it by album, I know what album I want to go to, or by the artist. And then the other case is when I don't really know what I want to listen to, and I want to go by songs. And so I can shuffle from the song thing. But then I feel like I have all these playlists that I want as well, or Genius, which I still is actually fairly decent, but it's hidden in that more thing, so I never use it. And the same thing with playlists is I've been creating less and less playlists because they're tucked away in that more section.
Yeah, and it's interesting. So, you know, the screenshots show just three tabs, and there's a lot of white space, and it's almost like obvious that this rumored streaming service is going to be a fourth tab, but they they can't obviously put it there.
Well, wasn't one of the tabs radio?
Well, yeah. So right now it's my music.
So wouldn't it just replace radio?
No, because they're gonna keep iTunes Radio around. I don't think they're gonna incorporate. I mean, maybe they'll incorporate it with the streaming service. It's a possibility, but so far it seems rumor wise that they're going to. It's gonna be separate to iTunes Radio. But I mean, it's definitely a welcome change, and. And I'm all for it. I don't listen to you know, a lot of music. I'm more of a podcast listener. But the next one that we have here is a very interesting one, and I don't think it got enough coverage around the internet that it deserved. So it came to be known that last year Apple purchased an Israeli camera technology company called Lynx. imaging for roughly $20 million. And I have a quote here that was really interesting to me. It says, last year, Lynx announced the launch of a miniature multi-aperture camera, half the height of a standard mobile camera, with the ability to create stunning color images and high-accuracy depth maps for SLR image quality without the bulk of the SLR camera. And that is truly where Apple is having a problem, because they are at a point where they cannot make the camera sensor any smaller, or at least with the technology that they're using, because they've been using Sony lenses. And the camera, let's just talk about the still camera alone. Since the iPhone 5, it hasn't dramatically improved for still images. Yes, it's gotten a little better in low light. And if we're not talking about still images, we got the slow-mo, we got the burst shot. But as far as like the quality goes, it's still an 8-megapixel shooter. And this seems like the missing piece to take the iPhone's camera to the next level. Because I was, like, for example, before this news came out, I'm not expecting Apple to blow us away with any more camera technology, because, you know, this, like I said, you can only go so small with the sensor. But now that they have this company, I'm really optimistic. I can't wait to see what type of shots that you could take. And I don't know if they're going to save this, you know, I don't know when they acquired the company. I thought it was last year, but it may have been more recently. But, you know, I don't know if this is something they can integrate with the iPhone 6S. They may wait for the whatever they'll call it, the 7. But I'm excited.
Well, I think the reason why this story didn't get that much tech press is exactly that. We don't know when it's going to be tangible to us as customers. And so news sites don't really want to, you know, waste the characters and the clicks on it, because, like, it's interesting that Apple has the possibility of doing something cool and new, but when and what they do, no idea. And it's all kind of now just hidden away within the labyrinth of Apple that they're not going to get to see what actually this turns out to be.
So
you went to the Apple Store, right?
I actually made multiple trips to the Apple Store.
Man. You know, I walked by an Apple Store twice and didn't go in.
We're getting ahead of ourselves, Cody. We're getting ahead of ourselves. So let's rewind back to midnight Friday.
Oh, right. Yeah. That happened. I forgot about that.
So
I spent a lot of money. I forgot.
You spent I will rip the Band-Aid off and tell listeners that I did not get an Apple Watch, and we'll get into that a little bit later. But Cody, what did you do at midnight Friday?
So I was sitting at a bar at 11:55, opening the Apple Store app, seeing that it said not ready yet. Double click, force quit, swipe, open Apple Store app, not ready, double click, force quit. And I had this great motion with my thumb. I didn't even have to move my hand. My thumb just had it down. Finally, it says the stainless steel 38 millimeter with the Milanese loop that I had favorited was available. I clicked, I want that. And then it was great because there was just a Apple Pay button right there. And I just clicked Apple Pay and I pressed my thumb against it. Voila, done. It was, I spent maybe 5-6 minutes waiting for it to happen because it didn't hit me right at 12:01. It hit at around 12:02, 12:03. So I had a few minutes of nerve-wracking waiting, hoping that my watch didn't get purchased by someone else. But it finally went through. Then I hit Apple Pay and pressed my thumb against it. And then I realized it was like, I got some error that my address was wrong on the.
No.
And so I had to go in and change that. So that was, but it had went through. And then I might not get the watch because I noticed after I made the transaction that my billing address is incorrect on the receipt. Although I haven't got any emails yet. So I'm kind of just living in this fear that I'm going to get an email on the 24th that says, yeah, you had the wrong info, so we're just, you're not getting one. But I think it's fine because I used Apple Pay to pay. So I think it just kind of used my address that was stored in Apple Pay and not the shipping or the billing address that I had stored on iTunes. I hope.
It seems like the App Store app and Apple Pay worked smoothly for everyone that I've, you know, been following on Twitter. That is definitely the way to go for anyone who wants to order online.
Less than 30 seconds for the transaction if you ignore my incorrect information. I mean, it was super quick once it was there, which was really, really cool.
It's actually a little bit scary how much money you can drop with the with the placement of your thumb on the fingerprint sensor.
Yeah, but I was the total nerd. I was hanging out at a bar with some friends, and we were in Vegas, and I was sitting there drinking a martini and trying to buy an Apple Watch.
That's classy right there.
Super Apple fanboy, right?
So you went stainless steel with the Milanese loop, which I will commend you on in a moment.
And I still haven't tried one on yet, so I have no idea what I just bought.
Well, I tried your configuration on. We'll get to that. So I decided to avoid Apple stores Friday, and I avoided Apple stores during the weekend. I just did not want to have to deal with the mayhem, and it didn't feel worth it for me to wait for a very long time. But I believe it was Tuesday that I was leaving work, and I was going towards my wife's job, and she works right next to the Apple Store in Soho. So the great thing about my wife working by the Apple Store in Soho is that I make so many trips in that store. The security people probably think I'm like casing the joint, but I'm just hanging out in there, you know, waiting for her to get off of work.
Hey, it's nice, air conditioned and heated place.
Yeah, it's great.
Charge your phone.
A Wi-Fi. I mean, it's literally Starbucks, but without the coffee.
Thousands of dollars worth of tech products instead.
Of course. So I checked the Apple Store app when I got into Soho, and it said the next appointment for try-on was like 7:30, and I was like, well, that's too late because it's 6:00. I said, let me make one for Wednesday because I want to try one on before, you know, the podcast. But I said, you know what? Even though I made one for Wednesday, let me just walk in the Apple Store and see what it's like. Let's see if it's crazy. So I walk in and I catch somebody in the front of the store, and I'm like, so can I try on the watch? And they were like, oh yeah, sure. So they're like, you know, put in your Apple ID, blah, blah, blah. And then after I put in my information, he's like, oh, see that girl over there? So he sends me over, and there's about three people in front of me on this line. And by the time I got to the front of the line, they were like, Joe? And I was like, yeah, I'm here. Like, they got to me fast. Like, I did not have an appointment. And this is,
you know,
what?
To Angela for her. Like, you've now been to the Apple Store twice, and the lines have not been the insanity that we assume.
I know. My experience has been really good. So then I get called over to, you know, these tables, and the tables have this blue mat, very nice quality. And, you know, when I was listening to a couple of people talk about the experience before I tried it on, people kept saying they were badging into these Apple Watch like draws, and I thought they were badging with their employee badge, but they're actually using the NFC on the Easy Pay, and they're putting that up against the table, and that is unlocking the draws of Apple Watches.
I want to point out here, because I've heard a lot of, on multiple podcasts, people have said, you know, they use the iPod in the Easy Pay, and the new Easy Pays that they're using are 5S's, right? Not iPod Touches.
Correct. They're iPhone 5S. Yeah. They used to be iPod Touch, but they're more advanced now. And so they brought me over. I shook the Apple employee's hand, and she was like, all right, so what do you want to try on? And I was like, It's like, all right, let me try on the one that I might get in the future, the 42 millimeter black sport. So it's like, let me try that on. So she takes it out.
That's the black band, right?
The black sport with the black band. She takes it out, and she, of course, they have to put it on you. You can't put it on yourself. So I reach my hand out. she puts it up top, and then she's like, can you flip over? I flip my hand over. She buckles it in. And I don't know, everyone else made these experiences seem like really cool, but it was like really awkward. Let me just, like, spoiler alert, this only took me like 3.5 minutes because I only tried on two models. And like, once it's on your wrist, you can't do anything. It's just on your wrist, and it runs a demo loop, and the Apple employee is just standing there. And like, I saw other people interacting. Like, this try on experience is for like the person who's not technologically savvy, and they have questions about it. Like, I heard a lot of like, you know, middle-aged women in there, and they're like, oh, how much is this one? Oh, what does it do? And they're answering and they're interacting. But like, with us tech nerds, like, I know everything about this watch without having it. So I'm like, I'm there. She puts the sport on my wrist, and I literally stand there awkwardly for like 40 seconds. I'm like, and then literally silence. I'm feeling the taptic feedback feels good. And she's like, so how do you like it? And I'm like, it's good. Like, this was so awkward. I'm telling you, Cody, I wish this was on recorded. So then, well, I'm like,
so that's exactly why. So I was in Vegas this weekend, and there's like three Apple stores there. One of them is in Caesar's Palace in the huge, like, humongous complex of a mall that they have there. And I thought to myself, man, I really kind of want to go play with the new MacBook and look at the Apple Watch. But I didn't want to. When I thought about it, I was like, I could probably convince my boyfriend to, you know, give me like 5 minutes in there. And I looked, and the appointments were totally free. But I was like, it will just be so damn awkward because I don't. All I want to do is put the watch on, play with it for 2 seconds, and be done. Which is exactly what, you know, you were trying to do.
Yeah, that's all I want. All I wanted to know is how it felt. So then, in my head, after this, I'm like, damn. I'm like, this is super awkward. I was like, let me at least try on one other thing because, like, I don't know what else to do. So I said, all right, let me. I was like, do you mind if I try on a steel one? She's like, yeah, sure. So takes the Apple Watch Sport off of my wrist, and she's like, you know, what would you like? Which type of steel? We have a bunch of bands. So I saw the Milanese Loop, and I was like, I gotta try this thing on. I mean, it looked so cool from the moment I saw it. And I tried on the steel watch with the Milanese Loop, and I will tell you, Cody, unequivocally, you picked the probably one of the best configuration of the watch without buying a gold one for the obscene $10,000.
Oh, man. That makes me, because I was nervous.
Oh, yeah. First of all, the steel body itself looks great, but the Milanese Loop felt phenomenal. It actually felt better than the sport band on my wrist, and you have the benefit of having, like, really fine grain control of how tight the loop is, because it pretty much will magnetize wherever you'd like it to. And once again, I had it on for maybe 45 seconds, and then I was just like, okay. It was really awkward because once I had the second one on, I'm just like, I'm done. Here's my wrist. So then, next to the mat, the blue mat, at least in my store, they had the demo display. But like, it was right next to the blue mat, and I knew she had another appointment. I was like, so do you have that demo thing anywhere else in the store? She's like, oh yeah, it's over at that table. So basically, I went over to the demo watch. You've seen the display. It's kind of connected to an iPad mini in this white enclosure.
Right.
And that I spent a good half an hour on. I actually have a lot to talk to you about that. Did you have any other questions, though, about this try-on experience?
Well, I do have one question. Where was it placed in the store? Was it by the other iOS devices? Was it in its own area that was kind of cleared off? Was it in like the one-to-one area? Was it by the Genius Bar? Was it by the Macs? What did they, layout-wise, how did they kind of shelter off the experience?
Well, in the Soho store, since it's two floors and there's this big staircase in the center, when you walked in...
And on the right is iOS and on the left is Mac.
Not anymore. Mac's all the way in the back of the store. Okay. And so the way they had it is you walked in and there was four tables, two to your left, two to your right. The first set of tables just had the watches under the glass case. And they were just there for viewing purposes. You can't really do anything. They're just under the glass case. They did have the gold ones, since Soho is one of the select few stores to carry gold, which I was really tempted. I'm tempted to go back and see what their gold experience is like.
You should do it.
Because they may take me into like a separate room, and I don't know. Like, all I know is that if I do try it, I'm going to dress nice. But
No. You need to wear like ripped blue jean shorts and a tank top and like a straw hat with a piece of straw hanging out of your
and then they're gonna be like, are you Derek, you're gonna try the gold watch? I'm gonna be like,
I want to see just what they'll say. This is for science, Joe.
maybe I don't even know if I own half of those things that you described, but
I can send them to you.
two tables, one on the left, one on the right, with just the glass, and then two additional tables on each side that had four mats and four employees attending each table. And they are just there to, you know...
Put watches on your wrist?
Pretty much. I think we overestimated the amount of people who were going to try it on, versus just kind of stare at it in the glass case. Like, for example, after I tried mine on, it started to get a bit slow and people were hovering around the watches under the glass case, and an employee was like, hey guys, let me know if you want to try it on. And people were like, not many people were kind of jazzed up about it. I mean, it was really, honestly, it was the curious people like me, but I think also a lot of people who pre-ordered their watch just wanted to see how it would feel on their hand. Another thing to note is the 38 millimeter in real life, IRL, damn, that thing is tiny. Like, I wasn't expecting it to be that small. The screen, I don't know, the screen's a lot smaller than I expected it.
Well, see, I didn't measure my wrist, but I kind of did loosely attempted to put like my phone on my wrist with the actual sizing. And I think my wrist is actually the exact size of the 42 millimeter. Like, that's how big my wrist is. So I felt if I got the 42, it would just take over my entire arm, instead of where the 38 would look more like a watch instead of an oversized hunk of display.
So I spent time with the Apple Watch, like the functioning display, twice. The day I tried it on, and actually today. So today I was in the Apple Store once again, and I was playing with those three. So I have like a good now, I don't know, collectively like a good probably 40 minutes of me sitting in front of this display fiddling around.
Nerd.
And a couple of things to note, and I don't want to get too into it, but what people are saying as far as UI confusion, that's very real. So what I found myself, you know, curious about is like, what screens can I force touch? What screens can I not force touch? Now, when you do force touch a screen that doesn't bring up a menu, it still shows you some type of menu, some kind of bounce to the screen. So, but it, you know, where, what I was trying to gauge is like, what do I force touch? What do I use the digital crown for? You know, the side button, and kind of getting used to the overall interface of the watch. And, you know, there's just certain things that weren't clear.
Well, I mean, we talked about that, I think, in the episode when Joe Darnell was on, of just they don't have the real estate to express these ideas in design. And the hardware is so tiny that they can't even do it in that. You know, like on the original iPhone before there was Touch ID, the home button had the exact shape of a app icon on the button, the little square, like that was the rounded corners of an app icon to kind of express like, hey, if you click this, you go back to the app icons. And there just isn't real estate on the hardware or the software to convey these ideas. And I Force Touch is a perfect example. Like what you put a like 3D symbol or something to say like, push me really hard, you know, and that was funny to read in the reviews of how different people described pressing Force Touch. And even in the recent Apple videos that they've put on the Apple Watch website of like exploring Apple Watch, whatever, the little tutorials about like phone, music, etc. They're like, press forcefully on the display. It's just something that's very new and hard to convey.
Couple other things. Force Touch in and of itself, I found on at least two of the demos watches, it was very tough for me to bring the menu up. Like I found that I was really tapping, I had to really forcefully tap down, but to the point where it kind of like hurt my fingertip. Maybe that's just the demo watches. Maybe it'll feel differently when it's on your wrist.
I doubt it.
You doubt it?
Yeah.
You think that it's actually that hard to force press?
Probably. Yeah. I mean,
I think they could tweak it. I think it's something that's tweakable. A couple of quick other things to note. One thing that I thought was cool that I found out today by mistake is like if you are in a random screen and you take your hand and cover the front of the watch, you palm it and you let go, it brings you back to the watch face. So you could be anywhere in the, you could be anywhere in the watch and you just cover it. You cover it real quick and you're back to the watch face. You can see the current time. I thought that was like super awesome. And really cool. And then in Passbook, when you bring up a credit card in Passbook, it does this little animation that kind of points to the side button and it's like double click to pay. And I thought that was a cool nifty animation. And
well, I think it was I want to say Mike Hurley who was talking about the Apple Watch and trying it on. Yeah, it was on Upgrade, and he was saying, you know, when you if you're on the watch app on the, I don't know if it's the home screen because the home screen is the watch face, but when you're on the app launcher menu, if you're on the watch and you rotate the digital crown, like UI elements start appearing, but not all at once, like just bits of it. Like first the circle will appear, and then, and I think there's so many little things like that, just smart UI stuff that can't really be expressed in a review, can't really be expressed in a, like a product video, but they are like the core of Mac or Apple's kind of products of just the tiny little details that kind of bring a smile to your face when you see them.
That was really cool. So essentially, whatever app is in the center of your screen, if you take the digital crown and slowly scroll it, the app kind of comes together, and then you can scroll back out, and you could do it fast, you could do it slow, and it's just it. Yeah, the digital crown is really smooth, like everyone's saying. I really think that it was the right move for them to do that. I actually found myself not using, even though you could use the touch screen to scroll through menus, I found myself not using it. The digital crown just felt right. That just felt like the thing that you would use. Those are my initial thoughts. I spent a lot of time with the UI. There's just little things that like, you know, certain things acted a little slow. One thing that I thought that you would be for, you know, sure able to do, but you can't is like, say you're in the Photos app and you want to share something. You can't do that. You can't like force touch on a photo and then say, send it in a text message. And I can see why they don't want to do that because like whatever shows up in the photos is only what you favorite on your iPhone.
Right.
I'd like to see something like that, but my final thought about using the Apple Watch, not trying it on, but using it, is that third parties are going to make this watch, because the core experience, like, because that's all you can really get is a real watered down core experience with the stock apps. There's not much, but I think that, I mean, I'm already seeing a ton of these apps come up in my app store, you know, saying that they are putting out Apple Watch up, you know.
Oh, yeah. It's like every update I've gotten, and there's been tons recently, everyone is saying like, hey, now we have an Apple Watch app.
That they are going to make this watch the popular item that it's going to be. But I don't know how popular it is going to be. I'm seeing that Angela Renz made it even more official that you're probably not going to be able to buy one in a store until June at the minimum.
You totally stole my segue. I had a perfect segue lined up to talk about that from
Oh, please tell me what it is. Come on, tell us what it is. I want to know.
I was just like, oh, so, you know, that's your final thoughts on it. Are you going to buy one? And you know, you would talk about that. And I was like, well, you can't buy one until June anyways. So,
well, no, that is a good question. I mean, you're now, I should have.
Are you convinced?
Am I convinced? I am not, but, I think this is the fact that everything is delayed is kind of a blessing in disguise, because it's going to give me more time to A, think about it, B, to hear what everyone else who gets theirs early, hopefully in April and May. But I will tell you this, and I was talking to a friend. It's not a matter of which style watch I'm going to get. It's a matter of this. Am I either going to get the 399 42 millimeter sport, or am I going to wait till the second gen? That's kind of my stance right now. But I mean, you know, it could change, but I don't know. I don't know if it's a surprise that we're not going to see them in stores, but it kind of sucks not to have that, you know, lines wrapping around the Apple Store launch. Like, yeah. She did say that, like, they're not going to do this for every product. She's like, those blockbuster launches, you're going to see them in the future. So probably for iPhone and iPad, they're still going to have people lining up. But on the other hand, I think it's the smartest thing they could ever do, because imagine if they did the pre-orders and then they had put a lot of stock towards the retail stores. Because think about it, you know, they probably would have sold out faster on the pre-orders if they had a set most of that stock for the launch in the store. This is telling us that they don't have many Apple Watches.
Oh yeah.
When I say many, I mean in the grand scheme of, you know, the millions who want one. It seems like they are very constrained, and they're making the right choice in doing it online only, because then you don't have people waiting online for no reason potentially, and having that conversation of turning, you know, thousands and thousands of people away from each store because they get like three in a day.
Yeah. Well, I kind of realized I did the math real quick. Isn't it kind of crazy how they made almost $500 million in 6 hours?
I know. It's
if
nuts.
Take minimum of 349 for a watch times a million, 300 million. Yeah, wow. Crazy pants.
And that's the thing. Like, they have over 400 retail stores now, and they would have to set aside X amount of watches for each of those stores.
Yeah.
And let's just put a number on it and say like 5,000 watches for like a very high volume store, and maybe a little bit less for other stores, but like that adds up, and them limiting to online will be the best decision they made. And also, it cuts out your concern, Cody, from last episode about resellers at the Apple Store.
Yeah, the gray market.
So that cuts out the concern completely for the time being, of course. But none of that product is going to go, you know, elsewhere aside from someone, you know, reselling it on eBay or something like that.
Yeah. Well, they're still doing that. I think I saw a watch for like over $3,000 listed on eBay. It's like, we know they don't have the watch, but they're selling their pre-order for like 3x markup. Well, I think that's it for this week. Where can we find the show notes, Joe?
Oh, I actually have a funny story for you, Cody. So I was under the impression that we would have to direct our users to diagnosticsandusage.com/episodes/13. But I am an idiot, and I came to the realization that Squarespace is smart enough that you can cut out the episodes, and all you have to go to is diagnosticsandusage.com/13 to get to our show notes, less typing for you.
Well, Squarespace didn't sponsor the show, but thank you. And we'd also like to thank the sponsors that we have on our website, on our Patreon page, and also those who have rated us in iTunes. And I think that's it for the show, right?
Yeah. Where can people find you online, Cody?
At CP Coates on Twitter.
And you can find me at Joe Caiati on Twitter, CAIATI, and I write at joecaiati.info. Cody, you have a great night, and listeners, we will talk to you next week.
Bye, guys.